And welcome back to yet another episode, yes, another episode of Deep Thinking, the road racing, motorcycle road racing podcast. He's Ed Sorbo of Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at
It's le-suspension.com. You add Ed at in front of that if you want to email me.
Right, or you can just Google Lindemann Engineering.
That works too, but you've got to be able to spell those two words. And Sometimes that's tricky.
I'm Michael Gugis. You can find all my insane motorcycle-related rantings at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
So is this 19 or 20?
This is 20. We did 18 was the first one,
20. Number 20.
We just posted up number 17. And even though this is number 20, I'm going to make a prediction about a race that's happening this weekend. And if I'm wrong, I will still commit to posting up this podcast.
Okay.
Even afterwards. Because we don't edit ourselves, even though we probably ought to.
We should, but we just, there's no internal, what's the term? No filter.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no rheostat in there, man. We don't know how to turn it down. It's just
on or off.
Straight bullshit all the time.
So what's your prediction? Who are you claiming is going to do what?
Did you read my blog post today about the Ducati Superbikes?
You make blog posts?
Yeah.
Who knew?
At Motorbike Road Racing.
I did read that one.
Yeah.
I check it every morning.
So I think that's my prediction. I think that we might actually see a Ducati win a race in World Superbike for the first time since Carlos Checa.
Mike is pointing out that when you can't change the internal ratios of your gearbox,
mm-hmm.
therefore the bike with the wider power band, a twin,
right.
has an advantage over an inline four bike because it's got a wider power band, so more gears work in more places.
Exactly. And the last minute change to remove the restrictors gives it some top end horsepower. So the Ducati was the second quickest thing in a straight line at Phillip Island. So
Gilroy 840 wants to hear TZ lore. Hang on. No, I thought of one that, see, we kind of sort of make a plan for these pods.
And then we throw that out within the first minute.
Well, but no, I thought of something else that had to do with transmissions.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so TZs, I think as most people know, and RSs and all those GP bikes.
Real GP bikes.
Come with cassette transmission. And by cassette, we simply mean that the transmission assembly can be removed from the cases as a set.
Right.
So you take off the usually dry clutch, you take off that cover, and then you take out the assembly. It's all still together as one unit.
Right.
And then you put it on the bench, and you, in the case of a TZ, you undo a O-ring, which is you take off a spacer, and then you can slide the shift forks, and then you got the whole transmission on the bench in like 10 minutes if you go really fast.
But how do you keep the tape from getting all caught up on the spools if it's cassette type?
It's an 8-track.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Reel to reel.
Enjoy the pork chop.
But half of our listeners don't know what a cassette, right?
I know, right?
They've never heard of it.
So freaking old. Hey, my students today didn't know who Blockbuster was.
I met a woman the other day who'd never heard of the car named Kit.
The car named Kit? From, oh, good Lord, Knight Rider?
Yes, Knight Rider, the car. She never heard of it. But, you know, being a woman, she's not as gearhead, so maybe it was okay.
Yeah, maybe. Although, I was sitting there thinking to myself for a minute. Oh, God.
Anyway, speaking of transmissions.
Anyway. I wonder if that's the most Wait a minute. I wonder if the word anyway is the most commonly used word in Deep Thinking, the podcast.
I can tell you the most commonly word.
Is it what?
Right.
Right. Okay, keep going.
I picked that up from you. I hate it. We say it all the time, right?
Go ahead.
You get a TZ. Let's say you buy your first TZ 250.
Right.
Okay? It comes with this cassette transmission, which means you can change all the gear ratios. The standard, you know, the bike comes out of the box with standard first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then there's a shorter first and a taller first. And a shorter second and
so you get the whole kit?
The standard thing that the bike comes with out of the box back, you know, when we were getting them a lot, would be all the standard gears in the bike, and then in the spares kit, you got a short first and a tall first.
Right.
Short second, tall third, a third, second, short and tall in first, second, and third.
Got it.
So you had three possible gear ratios for first, second, third.
Okay.
And then you got standard and tall sixth. So fourth and fifth, you could only run standard, that's all it came with. And then you had these other ratios. That's the standard kit. That's what most people worked with.
Okay.
On top of that, of course, you had three countershaft sprockets.
Okay.
And then six or eight or whatever it was, rear sprockets. You had a lot of combinations. Okay.
Right.
And then over time, you might buy from the kit the short six gear to go along with, right? And slowly you're building up. Okay. Well, the full kit six ratios for each gear. Six first gears, six second gears, six third, all the way up, okay?
Right.
So you have this huge box that you have to keep all these individual gears in. And it's complicated because fourth gear is two gear sets together as one piece.
Okay.
Right? So it's not just that you get to have six fourth gear pieces and six fifth gear pieces. You need all the combination of the very shortest fourth with the bit, right? So there's a lot of pieces. So the kit is very expensive. In 2003, the last year of the AMA 250 GP season, mm-hmm. by this time I had worked with the standard gearbox a lot,
right.
and then slowly added a few, you know, that you know, like that you, some of these tracks you need
are
really
work
tall,
at a
right?
Track.
And buy them
right.
individually, okay? And so I knew how to use the gearbox. If you try to use the full kit, six choices in each gear in the beginning,
right.
it'd be like John France with the data. You spend all your time trying to figure out
just
what gear.
Just staring right? at the laptop.
I mean, let's face it. We had a chart, and it would tell you in kilometers per hour
right.
what the change would be from this gear to the next gear. And the increments were 3 kilometers per hour.
Seriously.
I want to go 3 kilometers an hour faster or slower in this gear, then I need this other gear, and I change it. So you gotta have the basics before you get the whole kit. So Bruce Lind had the full kit and he had a spare. And so he loaned me the spare as a sponsorship deal. So in 2003, I had six choices of each. And by that time, I knew enough shit that I could make all those changes. And it makes a big difference. We have a saying, you make power with your jetting,
mm-hmm.
you make lap time with the gearbox.
Interesting.
Okay. So if I
now, why was it making lap times? Was it minimizing the number of shifts keeping it in the power band?
So the modern TZ, the 2000 and newer, had a usable power band for a track day guy that would start at maybe 6,000 and go to 11.5.
That's pretty good.
Drivable,
yeah.
right?
All right.
But if you want to race at the front at an AMA National,
right?
I had a 2,000 RPM power band.
Okay.
And so if I am 500 RPM low when I make
right.
the shift, right? It matters.
Right. Okay.
And so that's how we say, so you make all the power you can by jetting it as good as you can.
Got it.
Then you get your lap time by having it so it, you know, it's
right.
perfect everywhere you go. You think in a four stroke, right? You get this wide power band, you get in the corner, boop, you drive out, it's easy.
Well,
you narrow that power band down to 2000 RPM,
yeah, it's a little more serious.
Yeah,
it's a lot more complicated.
It's fun because I learned the gearbox stuff on my 90 TZ,
okay,
which has like a 2000 wide power band where
the bike
doesn't even move below, right? And so when I get a V twin, I'm like, wow, this is great. I got all this. Anyway, so that was a fork lore. We got another fork lore, TZ fork lore coming at the end of the show for Galloway. And this tied
right.
into the thing about the transmissions.
Absolutely,
for the
you know?
World Superbike. So Michael thinks a Ducati.
Yeah.
Because he can't pick a Ducati. He has to pick all of them.
Well, there's only
is
two.
Gonna
it's,
win.
Either, it's either Davies or Bayless.
So which one?
Really?
It's going to have to be
you know what?
Bayless.
Davies, I don't know, man.
Dude, Troy, it's too hard
Troy,
to come back.
Troy is kind of in Winard or Bennett mode, man. He's got three races to do this. And, dude, if he pulls this off,
what I want to know,
he's already legend, okay? Because he won a World Superbike Championship and a MotoGP wildcard in the same year.
That's what I want to know. Okay, so he got the, hey, would you like to ride? This is a reward. Go ride it. Okay? And then he goes and wins the bloody thing.
Right.
Right? That's supposed to be impossible. Like,
yes.
He beat Rossi. Right? He wasn't.
No. You got to remember the details of that race.
That's what I want to know, the more details.
Ah, okay. It was the last race of the season.
Yeah.
It was the 2006.
Okay.
Nicky versus Rossi. Title battle. Last round. Rossi crashes. Nicky puts it in fourth gear and rides around.
Right. Nicky didn't have to win.
He just had to not crash, basically.
But still, this guy did show up and ride a piece of junk bike that he'd never ridden,
oh,
right?
No,
and he won with it.
That bike was fast.
That was back when the bike was still working.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, the moon
what
is a harsh mistress.
What is the deal with the moon?
Well,
it's been talking about the moon all afternoon long. I've been working on my bike.
The moon goes around the Earth.
Right.
And it rotates at a rate so that the same side of the moon always faces us.
Correct.
The far side of the moon is always the far side of the moon, which
right.
I think is kind of interesting how that worked out.
That
right?
happens,
it's just,
right?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
a really neat.
Give it a couple of million years.
Right? You'd think like it. there's a million speeds the Earth could go, the moon could spin at, right? There's only one where it keeps the same side facing
but
us.
But you know what they say about a broken clock being right twice a day?
Yeah, exactly.
We might be living, there's always the possibility.
By the way, I found the answer to that question.
What was the question?
The average error
is
of your clock that's not moving is 3 hours. Because the most it can be wrong is six.
Okay.
And it's going on its way to being the six, and then it's working its way back. So the average is three.
Got it.
And so then, of course,
interesting.
If your other clock is off by 5 minutes all the time, its average is 5 minutes that it's wrong because it's always the same.
Right.
And then it's a cycle, a physiological, what's the philosophy? A philosopher's question.
Right.
Whether, which is more important to you? The fact that it's right sometimes, right? Because the one clock is never right.
Right.
And so it's philosophy.
Philosophical.
Thank you. Whether, which has greater value to you.
Right.
Okay. So The Moon is a Heart's Mistress is a really interesting book that I'm reading.
Wait, I had an important thing to throw in here.
Okay.
Okay. We keep looking for answers to things, and it's good to look for answers, but every now and then, the answer is... it's a coincidence.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and sometimes the answer is, I don't know. And you've got to accept, I don't know.
Absolutely.
As being, right? Because...
right. Or we'd still be chucking virgins into volcanoes.
Yeah, I don't know leads to working to find the answer. And making up some bullshit leads to some bullshit.
So, bullshit squared. It's still bullshit.
We talked the other day about the risk involved in racing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, our conclusion was... we like this because it's serious.
Yes.
Right?
And right.
A bunch of people that are like, no, I don't know. I need to go find the answer. As opposed to a bunch of people that go, no, really. The sun's going around us.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Moon
so
is
in the
mistress.
Moon is the Harsh Mistress. It's the book I recommend you read. People living on the moon. People living on the earth. And a guy from the moon meets a guy from the earth. And he's trying. There's a miscommunication.
Right.
And it comes about. And the spirit from the moon says, how do you explain to somebody when you realize that he has no context to put your answer into at all? And I'm like, yes, that's my life. People are always calling me up and saying, well, but can't I buy the XYV valve and put that in? And they don't know anything. They don't even know how a spring works.
Right.
Right. And they're asking about sag or whatever. Right. And so my answers, consequently, are usually pretty damn long, longer than most people expect. And the scary thing about this is you could just say yes or no to them. Like if you just wanted to sell the little widget, you could say yes, and they would believe you, and then they would put it in.
And it might work because the whole psychological
thing. It only has to be better than what you got. And if what you got is trash, then it is better, and that's true. But I want to take it to being as good as it can be.
You and I used to have long arguments. Or not arguments.
We still have long arguments.
Yeah, but now we record them.
Now we record
them.
We share the pain.
Subject the rest of the world to this. No, we'd have discussions. We were working together at the track on my bikes. And I would...
those aren't discussions. Those are me beating my head against the wall.
Which is my thing.
Answer truthfully.
What?
Every time I tell you to do something, I've been right.
No.
Yeah, lying bastard. No.
But hold on.
Eventually you would just do what I say.
But there's an explanation that goes along with it.
Stubbornness.
Because, stubbornness, yeah, exactly. You know, complete refusal to believe that the earth is not flat. No, what would happen is I would come in and I would say, we need to take preload out. And you would say, no, we don't need to take preload out. Okay, fine. Then we need to add rebound damping or whatever it is, right? And eventually, after 5 or 10 minutes of you and I yelling at each other, insulting the sexual habits of each other's dogs and everything like that, you get around to asking the question, so what is it doing? And I would go, well, it's doing this. And you would go, no, we need to do this for this reason. And I would go, all right, let's try that. And that would usually work.
I used to have a rider who would pull into the pits and tell me what he want done.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, listen, I'll be happy to do that for you because you're paying me, right?
Right.
But I would recommend that you tell me what the problem is and then we'll have two brains working on the, you know, maybe we come up with something better. He being the smart guy that he is, well, yeah, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, frequently his thing was correct, but at least this way we had a way of checking.
At least.
Speaking of smart people doing smart stuff.
I was just about to tell another story about me.
I got a better one. So remember I told you that the International Space Station is the largest and most expensive, most complicated international thing that's ever been done outside of war.
And you know, it's also the third brightest object in the sky.
So the sun, the moon, and then the space station.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you follow
Spot the Station? I haven't seen the space station, but I remember watching Skylab go by. And we're at a national park, and it's dark, and then we have the ranger thing, and then it told us what time to look, and you can see it. It's cool, right? And there's people in that little spot of light going around the Earth, you know?
Right.
That's cool. So
do you not know about Spot the Station?
There's apps for everything now, right? I bet you there's apps for Where's Ed.
Yeah, right? You know, well, we all know where Ed is, in Ed land. It's a cool thing. It's Spot the Station. You can look it up, and it'll tell you. They'll actually send you an email alert.
Cool.
North-northwest, coming at this time, ending at this time. If I were a chick, I would totally be flashing those guys.
So, if I were a chick, I'd be flashing everybody.
I would never leave the house, but that's an entirely non-general public.
The Large Collider. Is it the Large Hadron Collider? What's the proper name?
I don't know. I'm terrified
of
that.
So a collider is a device that takes a particle and speeds it up and smashes it into another particle. And the idea is to produce temperatures closer and closer and closer to the that were experienced at close to the Big Bang, and to see what things were going on.
Right.
Right? Because E equals mc squared tells us that energy and matter are the same. They're interchangeable. And so if you smash the stuff together, it gets really hot. It turns back into energy. And that's the way everything was at the beginning of time. So we started out with small colliders. We made them bigger and bigger and bigger. Right? They used to be in a straight line. Now they're circles. There's a really big one in Europe. It goes under three countries. That's a really cool concept,
Sweet,
Switzerland, France, and Luxembourg, or something like that.
Is Luxembourg really a country? We've got Walmart parking lots bigger than Luxembourg, right?
So, a little while ago, they started this thing up,
right?
And they ran it, and they smashed shit together, and they proved the existence of the
Big Bang. But
no.
Oh, no. The
boson. The boson.
Yeah.
Higgs boson. Thank you.
Right.
Which is believed to be the thing that gives stuff mass.
Deep thinking. The podcast on advanced physics and motorcycle road racing.
You know,
not nearly as unrelated as
they
you
are
might
quite
think.
Related. And it's neat, right? You can get these concepts into your brain for a little while and you can try to hang on, but you got to keep working on it. They're complicated. They're difficult.
Yeah.
And part of the thing that throws us off, right, isn't that whatever physics of the universe are, they are. They've always been.
Right.
Because it, you know,
they're
it's
laws.
New to
there's,
us,
there's a
right?
reason. There's a reason they're called laws.
Exactly, right?
Know?
But the fact that they're new to us or to you when you hear about it,
right.
You have to undo what you knew before. So I love the example of the sun appears to be going around the Earth.
Right.
The Catholic Church banned the book for 305 years that pointed that out.
Right?
Right?
Well,
so
Rochambeau
try
Galileo.
Not to get stuck in, oh, that's a crazy idea. Yeah. No, you're crazy. You were wrong. And so anyway,
be open-minded. It might be a crazy idea, but it might still work.
Exactly.
You don't know.
So they built this thing, and they ran it at a whatever energy level, and they went, look at that. We're pretty sure now we got the Higgs boson.
Right.
Okay, so the next thing to do is run it up to a higher level. So they shut it down. They're doing the mods to do that, because these guys are smart, right? You do it in steps. You don't run it full boogie on the first try.
Right. Whole
and
matter,
so
antimatter
in a
thing.
Short period of time, they're doing the next level of test. It's like a couple days or a couple weeks, I'm not sure. Anyway, soon we should get some new, more cool information. And the
or you'll never hear this podcast because Earth will have winked out of existence.
As physicists like to say, what were the last words spoken by the human race? Oh, it was two physicists going, well, what if we try this?
Okay, turn it on.
Right? You know, that's interesting, right? When they were building the first bomb, the first nuclear bomb, there was a certain amount of, we are pretty sure that it's okay, but there maybe it rips a hole in space and we're all gone. I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll never know.
You know, those guys were making plutonium, and they knew they needed a critical mass as part of making a bomb, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're making plutonium, they're refining it, whatever, and they're storing it. And they were smart enough after a little while to go, you know what? Let's spread this shit out a little bit. Let's not put it all in one room.
You know, not to be morbid.
Not knowing that you don't know everything is the first step to knowledge.
Maybe this is how those guys can go fast at the Isle of Man.
They don't know it's crazy.
Knowing that if you crash, that's the last thing you're going to remember,
not going to hurt for long.
Oh, man, that's hysterical. What?
2-minute board.
You know what? Let's go along on this.
Okay.
Okay.
We always do.
All right, don't we? Let's go back to gearboxes.
Yes.
There's a possibility that a Ducati will not win at the Chang International Circuit. And here's why.
Well, other guys trying hard?
No. Check the, everything on paper looks right. Like this is a Ducati track. Long straights, hairpins, torque, all that stuff. But we're going to talk about the uncertainty principle a little bit, okay? Everybody had to pick a set of gear ratios at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And those are the only gear ratios you get to run. Somebody on one of the teams, on one of the bikes, might have inadvertently picked exactly the right set of gear ratios for this track.
Well, basically, you got three choices on this, right? You can gear the bike for a small track.
Right.
You can gear the bike for a big track internally, right?
Right.
And what that means is wide spread between the gears or narrow spread between the gears, because then your overall ratio is really tall and you need a narrow spread for the fast track, or it's really wide and you need a wider for the slow track.
Right.
Or the third choice is some kind of average.
Exactly.
Right?
And who knows? You know, maybe who are the guys at
the you're gonna pick the strength of your bike, and you know it's a lot of factors.
Maybe the Suzuki guys or the Honda guys, you know, they aren't really quite up with the Aprilias or the Kawasaki's. Maybe they, you know, picked just and lucked out, and just like they're the first practice session of Friday, they're going to be 3 seconds faster than anybody.
I was working with a 250 TZ rider at a track that I had not been to.
Right.
But I rode the track on the Saturday or during that weekend at some time. And rider comes in and he says, I'm in second gear in that corner and it's too short. I want you to change second gear. Or maybe it was too tall. I forget.
Okay.
And I look out at that corner and I go, I haven't ridden this track on a TZ, but I'm pretty sure that's a third gear corner or a second gear, whatever. One gear different from what he said. And he goes, and I go, are you 100% sure? Right? Because you don't want to go in there and change the gear and then it's wrong and you got to change it again. Right. There's only so much time in the day.
Right.
And it was fucking hot that weekend. Talladega.
Ugh.
So he goes, no, I'm positive. And, you know, I asked him some questions. I'm like, okay, that's good. You know, so boom, he goes out. I make the change. I got like an hour to get it done, right? Not a big deal. And so he goes out. He rides around. He's going about the same lap time. He comes back in. He's got a little smirk on his face. He goes, yeah, you were right. It's third gear. Change the gearbox, right back to the other chain. Then it was all good. It's worth doing it. That's why we get paid, right?
That's racing, as they say. Ed Sorbo, tell me about the first time you rode a 125 GP bike. That's our 2-minute board.
You originally asked me to tell the story of the first time I raced one, but I go, no. The first time I rode one was way better story.
Great. We'll save
Sport
that for
Bike
later.
Hawaii.
Right.
I had this relationship with a shop in Japan, and they had all these really cool bikes that we couldn't get very easily, the gray market bikes and whatnot. And the guy,
so
these bikes are like worth $5 over there.
Right.
Right? And they're worth $50 over here. So we're like, let's work something out.
Right.
So one of these bikes that comes over is an RS125.
Okay.
So I take it to Hawaii Raceway Park and I'm going to ride it.
Is this a street one?
No. RS125. This is the GP bike.
Okay, got it.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. They called the street one an RS also, but this is a real.
Hold on, I want
GP
you to
bike.
Repeat that. I'm right.
You were right on this, yes. And so I'm riding on this bike that, you know, we basically took it out of the box and it's a reputable shop and everything should be okay.
Okay.
Girlfriend's up in the top of the grandstands watching me ride. I come through the gate shack S's. I close the throttle to slow down, to start braking for the off camera to see something seize up solid.
Okay.
Just like you imagine, worst case scenario.
Right.
And it high sizes me over the top of the bike, right? And I go flying and go boom, 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 boom. But I'm fine.
Okay.
I should have told the story slightly different.
It's okay.
Okay. This crash of an RS125, the first one that I rode, bent the frame of a truck.
Because the bike hit
the
truck.
So the girlfriend sees me crash.
Okay.
And this is a track day, so we don't have corner workers. We just wave our own flags after we crash. So she runs.
How could that go wrong?
She runs down the bleachers and hollers and, you know, they jump in a truck and they're driving up, you know, to get me. And they take the shortcut through the infield of the track.
All right.
And we have sprinklers at Hawaii Raceway Park now for the first time. We're trying to make the place look good. So there's a thing that sticks up out of the ground. And the guys who built the sprinkler didn't want the sprinklers to get run over. So he put a tire around them, a car tire, and filled it with cement.
Oh.
So the guy driving the truck doesn't see the tire and runs over it, but it's full of cement. And it whacks some part of the frame in the front of the truck and bends it, right? So I picked myself up off the ground after crashing this bike on like lap three, it seized or whatever, right?
Okay.
And I turn around to see the truck coming through the infield. I'm like, oh, cool, they're coming to get me, no problem, right? And then a geyser of water shoots up behind the truck, right? And so now I'm in my leathers, and I don't want to go outside the track and turn off the water supply to the whole track because then we can't use the bathrooms.
Okay.
So I go into the shed, and I get a push broom. It has a tapered wooden handle, and I get a mallet, and I'm standing in the back of the truck holding the tall handle of the push broom, hammering it into the plastic pipe, and the water's spraying all over the place. I'm getting soaked in my leathers. It was hot, so you know, it was no problem, whatever. I thought that was pretty entertaining. And then of course we had to tell some story to the insurance company to get the truck repaired. Yeah. So I crashed the 125 the first time I rode it so bad it bent the frame of a pickup truck.
That's impressive. Yeah. I gotta say, I am impressed.
Dude,
by that
I got
story.
Stories. Ask me someday about setting up the lights at the track for the night race.
Oh, we forgot the whole lightning story, but that will happen
next
right.
time. We got to talk about lightning.
Put that down. Put that down on the list.
We'll write that down
right now.
He's Michael Gugis.
I gotta go eat, and he's Ed Sorbo.
Aloha.
Aloha.